Padre has had in eight innings against Winsicum. The pitch. Swinging a line drive to right. Pitch coming in. He dives, and he makes the catch. Hunter Pence.
Hello, baseball fans, and welcome to a podcast to be named later. My name is Chris Mitchell. It's been a while, but we're getting back up on the horse here. It is a beautiful day weather-wise out here in Boston on Wednesday, November 9th, for all of you out there. I doubt this is a day that you will ever forget. It is the morning after. Literally, it is the morning after the disaster that was the Trump election. We aren't going to be talking politics today. We don't talk politics on this website. We don't talk politics in any extensive way, shape, or form on this podcast. But I had to reference it. I had to set the marker to let you know where we were. For all of you out there that are distressed, hungover, depressed, scared, nervous, all understandable. But let me just say right up front on top before we talk a little bit of baseball today. We were going to be talking with Jim Callis, by the way. But because of some technical difficulties, and I guess Blog Talk Radio was having trouble working, they couldn't handle the Trump disaster either. So we were having some difficulties getting the show up and running on time. So rather than have this screwy kind of delay, which you're dealing with now if you're listening to this, I rescheduled with him. So we'll be back with Jim Callis tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. So on Thursday, when we'll have some hours separated from the election disaster of 2016, we'll talk prospects with Jim Callis. But today, I'm just going off the cuff. I'm getting back into the swing of things, and I wanted to ease your concerns, everybody out there. We will be fine. The country will be fine. I wasn't crying or getting upset there. My throat literally is a little bit dry. But we're going to be fine. The country will be fine. The fact that Trump is a horrible leader of this country, nonetheless, everything is going to be all right. So the best way to get over things, the best way to try to just accept reality and move on with life is to do the things that you do every single day. And one of the best things you can do as far as forgetting the bad or just enjoying the good, in my opinion, is to talk some baseball. So that's what I'm going to do this morning for a little while. I'm going to randomly go off the cuff. Unfortunately, because I was preparing for a prospect discussion, I'm not really prepared to have a full-on discussion on any other topic, but I can always babble and ramble about baseball. So I'm going to do that today. I'm just going to randomly go through some things. I'll randomly go through the standings, talk a little bit about some of the top free agents that are going to be hitting the market this year, and it is not a strong market. I'll also talk a little bit about the MVP and the Cy Young voting. And I want to get into this in more detail with some guests in future episodes of this program. But I'm just going to touch on a little bit of it today and go from there. But just to remind everybody, we just came off a fantastic World Series, if you don't forget. Don't forget that. The World Series just ended. The Chicago Cubs got off the schneid after, 108 years. They are World Series champions. And I wrote about this for the website, minorleagueball.com, that it was difficult. Who are you going to like and who are you going to hate going into this World Series? Because the Cleveland Indians were a fantastic story. They were a true Cinderella story. It was a David versus Goliath kind of World Series, and it's so nice to do it that way. It's good to have an underdog that you can pull for and like. Terry Francona is as likable a person in sports and in public that you're ever going to find. There's no polarization when it comes to Terry Francona. Everybody loves him, and he's done a fantastic job. He did a fantastic job getting to the World Series. You can always question moves in-game and in-series. So if you want to criticize him for some of the things he did during the World Series and losing three in a row, you can do that. I don't think there's a really strong argument to say that he somehow lost a game or lost a series. But there's always something you can do. Everyone was stunned at some of the moves Joe Maddon did. So if there's always going to be some things you can do. But nonetheless, the Indians were a great story. And the fact that they were able to get to the World Series in one game away from winning it, without Carlos Carrasco, without Danny Salazar, Kluber going on short rest on two consecutive starts at the end of a season. I mean, to put on that kind of workload for an entire baseball season and then go on short rest back-to-back outings, you had to think that it was going to be tough. The Indians had no choice. They had to do it. It's not like Francona said, I'm sending Kluber out there exhausted rather than Carlos Carrasco, who could have been a Cy Young candidate if he could have stayed healthy all season. So there, he really had no other choice. He couldn't send out Cody Anderson or one of those guys for Game 7. He had to send out Kluber, and there was nothing he could really do about it. So I'm not blaming him in one bit, and I don't think anybody else should be. But it was a fantastic series. It went 7 games, 2 teams. It was easy to root for the Cubs, too, because they're young, they're talented, and they haven't won it forever. Then you've got the Indians, who are young and talented and who haven't won it for a long time, and they were a likable team. They were clearly the underdog story. The only thing you could really be maybe critical of as far as the Cubs go is that they were pretty damn talented. They almost blew it. And the fact that they were the presumptive favorite going into the season, they had the best season record-wise in baseball. They coasted to the playoffs. They had a couple of bumps in the road during the playoffs, but for the most part, they coasted as well. So they were, you expected the Cubs to win it. They were the presumptive favorites to win it. And it's easy to root against that. But the Cubs being a likable team and having that history and that drought of World Series wins, that a lot of the natural inclination to root against the favorite was eaten away at least a little bit because of that. And so that really made for a great World Series. I kind of wanted the Cubs to win. I kind of didn't. I felt myself rooting for the Indians. When in the moment, I kind of, my head told me I wanted to root for the Cubs just to help them get off the schneid. But then at the same time, as I was watching the games, I was pulling for the Indians to win it. I was just naturally inclined, viscerally inclined to pull for the Indians. And so when the moments got a little bit close, when they got a little iffy, when Rajay Davis hit that home run, I couldn't help but be pulling for the Indians. So that was the kind of series it was. But I wasn't unhappy or heartbroken that the Cubs won the whole thing. So, fantastic World Series. Fantastic 2016 season. The Boston Red Sox, my Boston Red Sox, won the AL East with 93 wins. It looked touch and go there for a lot of the season. I can't say that I was overly enamored or excited or overly arrogantly in love with the Boston Red Sox. I love the youth on this team. I love that David Ortiz had a season for the ages at over 40 in his final year. I'm kind of heartbroken that he's not coming back. I can't believe he's not coming back. It's really kind of stunning that David Ortiz to be that good at that age and he's not coming back. I have concerns about the Red Sox in 2017, and we're going to do a lot more of talking about 2017 in future shows. But the Red Sox are young, and they should be as good next year as they were this year. My concern is get the big bopper out of there. When a guy has as good a season as he did this year, that's got to hurt you. I wonder what the effect of Big Poppy not being there will be on Hanley Ramirez. He was motivated. He was engaged this season. He didn't give up on the season. He didn't get injured and then just kind of just say, and throw in the towel. He seemed to be the good soldier, and I don't know if we're going to get that from Hanley Ramirez in Boston. So that's a concern. I do wonder if Mookie Betts can be an MVP every single year. He's a great player. There were some talk from the media that he was a dark horse MVP candidate. I thought it was a little bit ahead of his time, but he really is that talented. But I don't see him as Mike Trout. I don't see Mookie Betts as that elite, elite, elite guy that dominates the league for 5 or 6 years. I see him as one of the 6 or 8 best. But can he go out there and be an MVP candidate every year? Can he go 30-30 every single season and bat 300? I have to think that there's a little regression. I don't think Mookie Betts is going to drop off and be a bad player. I think he's going to be a really good player for a really long time. But if he goes to 20 home runs and 20 stolen bases and he hits 275 and plays gold glove defense, that's a phenomenal player. That's an all-star that is probably the best player on most teams. But that's also still regression from 2016. So I wonder if the Red Sox kind of blew their chances. Same thing with Rick Porcello. I thought he was grossly overpaid when the Red Sox gave him that contract. And in 2015, he didn't earn his money. But he earned it this year. He was their ace. He started their first game in the playoffs. And he started it because he deserved it. It wasn't for any other reason. It wasn't because David Price had been slumping going into the playoffs. It's because David Price, A, was slumping going into the playoffs, and B, David Price didn't have that great of a year. He was disappointing. He definitely did not earn his money in this first season in Boston. And Rick Porcello, throughout the season, week in and week out, start after start, every 5 days, was the best pitcher on the Red Sox. I can't help it and think, wow, what if the Red Sox had John Lester? He's up for the Cy Young in the National League. Imagine if you had a Cy Young candidate in Lester at the top, along with a Cy Young candidate in Rick Porcello, and then all of a sudden you've got David Price pitching as the number three, having a disappointing but still respectable, serviceable year. He didn't have a disgraceful year. He had stretches where he had some disgraceful outings, but he didn't have a horrible season. And if he was your number three, maybe the Red Sox were a little bit different, and maybe Lester's leadership on this team would have helped, because once they made the playoffs and they started celebrating David Ortiz at the end of the year, it seemed like they checked out. And this is a very young team. Maybe I don't know how you evaluate chemistry and those kinds of things. Obviously the Indians had it, and obviously the Red Sox did not. They gave up on the season. Once they clinched it in New York, they literally stopped caring, it seemed like, the very moment they heard about it. It was really strange at the end. For those of you who don't watch a lot of Red Sox games, the Red Sox were facing the Yankees. They had finished off a big comeback against the Yankees late in their game on the night that they clinched. And all of a sudden, they gave it away. Kim McGraw gave up a grand slam to Mark Teixeira. And all of a sudden, the Yankees get a walk-off ninth-inning victory off of closer Craig Kimbrell after the Red Sox have been able to come back and take the lead in that game. And it coincided perfectly with the moment that they heard that they had clinched their playoff spot. The owners were in the Yankees' front row boxes, cheering and clapping and giving each other high fives and hugging each other's girlfriends and all these different things. And you could tell the team knew that they had clinched. And they just said, okay, we're done. We've achieved the ultimate goal. The season is over. We crossed the finish line. We did what we needed to do. We made the playoffs. We won the division. It's over. And they all just wilted from that very moment. The Yankees went on to win that game. The Red Sox only won one more game the rest of the season. They sat guys. They celebrated Ortiz's career. They went into the playoffs and got swept. And while a couple of the games were, I guess, somewhat competitive, it wasn't like they were ever really – to say that they should have won that series against the Indians would be a stretch in the most kindest of terms. They just got owned in that series. So I do have concerns about what Boston does going forward. I think they have to expect some regression. Yoan Moncada did not show what you would like to have seen from a guy who you would like to start opening day in Boston in 2017. So this is going to be a good Red Sox team. Don't get me wrong. David Price has to get better, but I expect regression, a little bit of regression from Mookie Betts. I expect some regression from Porcello. I hope Kimbrel can actually get better, but closers, Kimbrel's had a phenomenal career, but at some point closers often just kind of lose it, or at least they lose a good share of it, and they're not quite the same. We didn't see the Craig Kimbrel this season that we've seen in the past, and so there could be some regression from Kimbrel. Xander Bogaerts really struggled in the second half. He had a great first half. He really had a bad second half. We'll see what happens. We'll see if this is a guy that's going to put it together and win a batting title and hit 20 home runs and continue to play shortstop, or if this is a guy that's going to be this way, that he's going to be a good player, talented player. We're going to see potential, but maybe he's going to have some problems. We'll see, because it's been a few years now. He should be able to be consistent at this point, and he did not show that in 2016. So that's my Red Sox. You've got an American League East team with lots of things coming. I don't expect the Tampa Bay Rays to be good. So they were 68-94 this year, 21 games out of the wild card, 25 games back of the division, and this team isn't probably going to get much better. We hear speculation or people saying, you know what, they should trade Evan Longoria. And after coming off a career year this year, or one of it, kind of a comeback year. He had a really good season this year, better than the season he's had in recent past. He stayed healthier than normal. If you're going to dump that salary, which is a good one, if you're going to dump that salary in that player to a contender, now's the time that you maximize the deal. And with his salary being extremely affordable, if a team believes that he can do anything close to what he did in 2016, with the fact that he's the cheapest really good player probably in baseball, his contract is an embarrassment. His agent should have been fired. I mean, I can understand wanting to stay in Tampa Bay and having to really give them a hometown discount in order to stay, to have a long-term deal, to be the figurehead of this organization, to stay there forever. I can understand that sentiment, and it seems like that's more important to an Evan Longoria because he signed it. But that contract is terrible from his perspective. He got shafted. So if he wants to go to a winner, in it, then the Rays could probably do extremely well on the trade market because he's still a good player. You can't be anything but happy that you have him on your club. He's a positive force in the clubhouse. He's a classy guy in every sense of the word. And then you add the fact that he can play. It looks like he's getting back to being the kind of the star that he was. Maybe, maybe not. That's true. But he definitely did that in 2016. And then on top of that, you throw on a relatively reasonable amount of time left on his contract at an extremely reasonable price. That guy has all of the details of what you look for a guy that you would love to have on your team for the next 3 or 4 years. And teams could use a third baseman. Third baseman isn't the deepest spot on the field in Major League Baseball these days. The Red Sox have been misspending and making blunders trying to fill that spot for years. You can't really argue that the Red Sox missed the playoffs because they're bad at third base, but they've been bad at third base now for quite some time, and it's not going to get any better. Pablo Sandoval back on the team isn't going to make any good things. Yoan Moncada is probably going to be moved over to third base, but with his poor play in September, that's probably not until the middle of the season or so, or at least for a month or so. He's going to have to prove what he can do because he really struggled. He just struck out and struck out and struck out. I mean, he was like Javier Baez in the playoffs, just striking out constantly. I think he struck out 9 times in a row. I think he struck out 9 out of like 11 at-bats in the major leagues. And finally, John Farrell said, this kid just can't play at the major league level right now. So the Red Sox would love to add a third baseman. I don't know if they'd want to pay for it with the prospects, but the Red Sox could absolutely use a third baseman like Evan Longoria. They've been starving for that production. I don't think the Rays will trade in the division, but if the Red Sox are willing to give up a third baseman like that, there's got to be a lot of other teams that would be willing to do it as well. So the Rays are probably in sell mode. You've heard rumors of Chris Archer being the Braves of all teams. We heard might be interested in Chris Archer. So the Tampa Bay Rays have some assets they can move. They haven't drafted and developed as well recently. Friedman is now gone. Obviously, he's in Los Angeles. He's been gone for a few years. Joe Maddon is gone as well. So maybe the Rays want to try to get back up and get moving quickly, and maybe they sell off a few of these pieces, and hopefully they hit on a couple of the free agents. I have some concerns because they haven't hit on them yet. They traded for Steven Souza, and he has been injured, and he hasn't been the guy they thought they were getting when they made that trade. So they haven't been drafting as well. They haven't been drafting. So you look at the Rays, and they should be making some moves, and they should be trying to get better quickly by trading for a reliable prospect that's ready to get going now, and they have some assets to do that. The Yankees are young. I don't think they're as good as maybe people think, but nonetheless, they have some up-and-coming young players. Gary Sanchez obviously had a monstrous second half of the season and might come sweep right in Trump-esque form, steal the Rookie of the Year campaign from Michael Fulmer, who put in essentially an entire season. If he had pitched one more outing, he might have won the Cy Young as far as the – not the Cy Young, but the ERA title at least. I don't think he qualified. He missed by like 4 innings. And one of the Tigers games was canceled. So if he had been able to start the final game of that season, he may have ended up winning the ERA title in the American League as a rookie. That's the kind of season that Gary Sanchez has. Toronto is going to be a tough one. They could lose Edwin Encarnacion because it looks like a lot of teams would like to have him. It looks like they don't want to add Bautista with the animosity that he's been behaving like going through the season when it comes to his contract. He's saying how he's not going to take a discount, how he thinks he was taken advantage of. So it seems like his money isn't going to be anywhere near as significant as he was hoping for, that he was demanding from the Blue Jays. It feels like unless the Blue Jays pay him the money they owe him plus a good contract, you know, he thinks he was taken advantage of under the current contract. So it kind of feels like he wants to be reimbursed for his charity and then also get paid big on that contract. And so it feels like for him to get what he deserves, he's not going to get what he thinks he deserves, but he'll probably get a pretty decent contract. He can get probably a lesser contract, the contract that he probably deserves, somewhere else, and he doesn't feel like he kind of gave in. It's sort of like an arrogance thing. It's a pride thing. He feels like the Jays owe him and that they should take care of him. It kind of feels like that. So it feels like if the Jays offer him the same that someone else does, his pride will allow him to take it from someone else, whereas it won't allow him to take it from the Jays. That's my feeling. It feels that way. I have serious doubts that he's coming back to Toronto, and he's declining and couldn't stay healthy. So if you want to be cautious and not give him a 3 or 4 year deal, The Blue Jays spend, but when they do spend, they have to spend it correctly or they get themselves in trouble. And they have a lot of needs and concerns as well. And I would have to assume that they'd rather add Edwin Encarnacion than Jose Bautista. So they can afford Bautista, I believe. And if they want to keep him, they can. But I don't think they want to. I don't think they want to take that risk and also pay that extra money. We'll see what happens in Baltimore. I don't know how they go where they've been able to go so far in the last couple seasons with that pitching staff. But Buck Showalter, who's up for Manager of the Year, has been able to do it. And he did it again in 2016. So even though he made that blunderous decision with Zach Britton in the playoffs, he's one of the best managers in the game. He does a phenomenal job over there. He gets the maximum out of that team. He gets more than the maximum out of that team every single year. I really can't doubt him. I'll probably pick the Orioles to be, depending on what the Blue Jays do in the offseason, I'll probably have them third or even fourth, depending on what the Yankees do, because the Yankees still have they have some nice, interesting young players coming. But I still think they have things they need to accomplish in order to become truly competitive. They were 84-78 this year. That's a good record. But for them to be a legitimate contender in the division or at least a wild card team, they need to get 6 or 7 wins better, and that's not going to be easy. So that will impact where I put Baltimore in the ALE standings. But just the trust that Buck Showalter gets what he needs out of that team, he gets it feels like at the very least, even in a bad year, Baltimore's going to win 86 games. So if they're going to win 86, they only need 3 or 4 to get to 89 or 90, which is what they did this year, and they made the playoffs. And that's what they've done the last 2 years. So Baltimore's going to be in the mix. We'll see what happens. It looks like they want to re-sign Mark Trumbo. They offered him the qualifying offer, but he refused. We'll see what he costs. He's an interesting player. I think on-base percentage is the most important category to look at. Again, I don't trust WAR. I don't believe it's accurate. It's skewed. It can be messed with, and it's, let's face it, it's not consistent. Every single website has a different algorithm for how they determine WAR. I don't think people are accurately reflecting how the value of stolen bases or the value of base running in general and the value of defense. I think it's overrated, and we saw that with Jason Hayward. Unfortunately, on that score, Jason Hayward had such a bad year that it makes it easy to write him off and just say, oh, he just had a bad year. But the fact is Jason Hayward has not had a great year in his entire career. He's had some good ones. So when he had a good one, it was probably better than we realized because he was in Atlanta and he was being ignored and all those things. And he's had some decent years. But the potential and the WAR score that he gets because of his defense and his base running, he's never even come close. He's considered probably, when you evaluate WAR and you ignore this season, he's been one of the top 10 players in baseball over the last 2 or 3 years, according to WAR. And he's just not. I mean, he's just not. I'm sorry. That contract was awful. Sabermetrics and advanced metric people tried to argue that he was actually came on the cheap, that he deserved more. And they used that, $8 or $9 million per 1 point of WAR, per win. So if Hayward was a 7 or an 8 or a 9 WAR and you get $8 or $9 million per point, that means he's worth like $72 million a year or whatever the heck it is. And yet these free agents are still only getting 15 to 20. So no matter what, these players are underpaid. And the argument is that so is Jason Hayward. But we'll see. Trumbo doesn't have a great WAR score because he's not a good base runner. He's not a good base. He's not a good defender. And his on-base percentage is mediocre. So while he hit 47 homers, and that's certainly valuable, and I think that's going to be downplayed. People are going to say he hasn't really done it enough. He's not consistent. He doesn't have the value on the bases or in the field to warrant a big-time Hayward kind of contract. But the fact is home runs do matter. he's going to hit 30 home runs no matter what. He's going to go out blindfolded and hit 30 homers. We'll see if he can hit 45 or 50. We'll see how often he can do that. When you don't make a lot of contact, when you're inconsistent at the plate and all you really provide is homers, you really need to do the Chris Davis thing and hit 40 to 50 every single year. I don't know if Trumbo can do that every year, but he's going to hit 30 to 35 for sure. He's going to hit that falling out of bed. So somebody's going to want to pay him. The question is how much. The fact that he's a 320 to 330 on-base guy rather than a 380 to 390, 400 on-base guy, which is what 47 homers implies he could be. That's a problem. That's a weakness in his game. So the home runs have to be downgraded a little bit. We'll see. We'll see what he gets. Someone's going to pay him because the home runs are glamorous, and he can definitely hit a little. But we'll see. We'll see what he gets. But I wouldn't be surprised if the Orioles lose him, and then what do they do from there? I don't think the Orioles necessarily need him to be good. I think they can easily do without him and do almost as well. His WAR score, I believe, for Trumbo was something like 1 to 1.5 or 2. So he essentially was a two-win player in Baltimore with 47 homers. And again, that's why I don't trust WAR. I think he's worth more than that. But the fact is he's not one of the best players in the game. He doesn't carry an organization to the playoffs, and you can do without him. We've heard rumors that the Red Sox are interested in essentially every short-term contract power bat you can find. Kendrys Morales, Carlos Beltran are two names we've heard the Red Sox interested in, which makes absolutely no sense considering they have DHs and they need a third baseman. Or it doesn't make much sense. The Red Sox can buy whatever they want. I can see them going for Edwin Encarnacion because he could literally just pop in and be David Ortiz. But why you'd want the 1 year of Morales or the 1 year of Carlos Beltran, except for the fact that the contract should be reasonable in only 1 year, but Hanley Ramirez wants to be the DH, and he probably should be the DH. Pablo Sandoval's sitting there. He's essentially a DH. He can probably be a first baseman, but he's built to be a DH, only he can't hit. Unfortunately, the Red Sox have Pablo Sandoval. I don't know if they're going to use him or if they're going to ship him out or if they're just going to cut him. So he's not really an obstacle. We're hearing them in the Beltran or the Morales conversations and the rumors. The Baltimore Orioles would be a much better fit for that, for the player and for the team. They let Trumbo go, maybe let Beltran play in left field a little bit, but mostly let him DH. Same thing with Morales. Maybe they let Davis go back to the outfield and have Morales play first base. Or maybe they sign Beltran, he DHs a lot. Or plays a little bit of left field, but don't wear him out. Don't run him into the ground because he's really fragile at this point in his career. But those guys on one-year deals, maybe a two-year deal for Morales, maybe he wants a multi-year contract. That seems to make some sense for the Baltimore Orioles. So I think they can let Trumbo go and for significantly lesser money replace him with something that will be a one or two win player. So if you value WAR, I think there's something to be said for that out there. I'm your host, Chris Mitchell. This is a podcast to be named later. We're supposed to be talking prospects with Jim Callis today, but we had some technical difficulties. We weren't able to get the program up and running on time. So any of you who are actually listening to this program know that you had to fast forward about 30 minutes in order to actually hear any of our programming. I'm just randomly ranting about what's going on in baseball. Some things to talk about here. Head on over to Twitter if you want to follow me, at CJMitch73. This podcast will be posting over at minorleagueball.com. I write some content over there as well, so if you want to read some baseball content, you head on over to minorleagueball.com for that. Or if you just want to talk baseball on Facebook with me, you can do that as well. I like talking baseball rather than doing actual productive work, even though I have a lot of it to do. So it's a podcast to be named later. You can head on over there. Just broke down the American League East a little bit to just glance over the Central. You got to give the Indians the nod as the favorite next year. Andrew Miller should be back. The majority of their offensive players should be back. Michael Brantley might actually get back on the field. So this is an Indians team that's going to have a lot of what they had this year, both on the mound as well as in the field. They had some surprise production from players. I don't know if Tyler Naquin got into the Rookie of the Year consideration. He's on the ballot. I don't know if he can do that again, but he's kind of a platoon guy. Rajay Davis, another platoon guy. Lonnie Chisenhall, another platoon guy. The Indians organization really put Terry Francona in a good spot. They had a lot of guys, either switch hitters or guys who could hit lefties or could hit righties, and then they could platoon one or the other with it, and it really was a good mix. We heard that the Indians might give Mike Napoli a qualifying offer. I thought that would have been outright stupid. I thought he was one of the most overpaid free agents in this offseason, and that was at $7 million. Had a great season, earned all his incentives, ended up making something like $10 million, and he earned it. So I have no problem with that. I thought $7 million was an overpay. I obviously turned out to be wrong because he had a fantastic season. He earned those incentives, so he ended up getting $10 million rather than $7 million. So he earned it. Congratulations, Mike. A fantastic season. You're one of the important reasons why the Indians were able to get where they were able to go in 2016. But the idea that the Indians might give him a qualifying offer at 17.2 to me sounded ridiculous. I wouldn't give him 17.2 over 2 years, never mind for one. So I thought the Indians offer, the thought that the Indians might offer him that was crazy. It turns out now it looks like they didn't and aren't going to. That's just smart baseball. You can't be offering him that. The problem is the Indians will probably lose him. And that's one thing that could hurt them next year. Can Salazar and Carrasco stay on the field? The bullpen still looks really good. Santana, Lindor, Kipnis, a really nice core of players. They got Bradley Zimmer as one of their top prospects in the minors. He can possibly be a full-time player in center field. I don't think he'll start on opening day, but I think he can probably be a full-time player over the next few years, and he's a talented all-around player. He can run the bases. He can play the field, and he can hit a little bit. He can hit for a little bit of power. He's not a perfect prospect. He's not an elite prospect, but he can be, I think, a full-time starting center fielder. So that's something for their future as well. But at least in 2017, it looks like they're probably going to lose Napoli. He can probably get a two-year, $18 million kind of deal from somebody. So maybe he wants to stay in Cleveland. Maybe they give him 10. Maybe they say, look, Mike, we can't give you 2 and 20, but we can give you 1 and 10. Throw some incentives on there. If you earn them, maybe you can get up to 14 or 15, just like you did this year. You know, earn 3 or 4 on top of your base salary and keep the years at a number that the Indians can afford. I could see how maybe Mike wants to do that. And Cleveland is a team that can contend. They had a great year this year, but they didn't get it done. It would be, I don't think, the worst thing in the world for Mike Napoli to take a 10-year deal with some a 1-year $10 million deal with some incentives to possibly get up to 14 or 15 mil. And then if he has to become a free agent the next season, then he does that. And he can probably still do fine in the free agent market the next year. Again, it'll probably be a 1-year deal rather than a 2, but nonetheless, he earns 10 and maybe up to words of 13. And then the next year he goes out and makes 7 or 8 or 9. He probably ends up making more over 2 years than what he would make right now over 2. The question will be, would an organization actually offer Mike Napoli 3 years? I didn't think the Red Sox should have offered him 3 years when he was with us. So for him to earn a 3-year deal now, I can't see doing that. But if someone was willing to give him a little bit more than he deserves and give him 3 years, he has to take that, I think. So that's the dilemma. I think someone will probably offer him 2 years and more money than Cleveland wants to do. I think someone would probably give him 1 year and more than anybody wants to do. So I think someone is going to be willing to accept Napoli at numbers that Cleveland isn't going to be able to swallow. So unfortunately for them, they're going to lose a key piece probably in their organization. But they're young and they can still really pitch. And if Carrasco and Salazar can stay on the field because they both missed significant time this year, that would far out and away cover up any of Mike Napoli's losses. So the whatever replacement player they get for Napoli, along with health from Carrasco and Salazar, the Indians actually could be better next year than they were this year, along with having maybe the best reliever in baseball, Andrew Miller, for an entire season rather than half. So they won 94, second most wins in the American League, one behind the Texas Rangers. Same amount of losses, one less win. They had a game against Detroit that didn't have to be played. They could have tied them easily for the best record in the American League. And next year, health permitting, they could actually be better. So good thing for the Indians. We'll see what happens with Detroit. It looks like they're trying to sell. It looks like they're willing to. They tried to get rid of Justin Upton after realizing they didn't give him a very good contract this year. It looks like they tried to ship him off at the trade deadline. Didn't work. It looks like they can't sign J.D. Martinez long-term. It looks like maybe because if they are going to rebuild, maybe Miguel Cabrera could become available. And I'm sure a lot of teams would love to take on Cabrera, even though he's paid a lot of money because he can still hit. So it looks like there's a lot of things not maybe going in the direction you want to go when it comes to Detroit, at least from speculation. Dave Dombrowski's not there anymore, but the owner, Mike Ilitch, still is. He still wants to win, I assume. I doubt he wants to start a rebuild process. So while you hear rumors and speculation that they may want to sell everybody, I just think that they're probably going to try to win still. J.D. Martinez might leaves after this season, I believe, after 2017. But you can win with him this year. He didn't stay on the field this year. If he did, maybe they get closer to the wild card. They have all those players still. So I think the Tigers, even though we're hearing that they may be selling, I think they were willing to sell Upton because they just don't think he can produce. So they'd rather go out into the market and sign Cespedes back. If they could just dump Upton's contract to somebody else and then sign Cespedes for whatever money he wants. That sounds to me like a Tiger move. Selling everybody does not sound like a Tiger move to me. So they'll be an interesting team in a very weak free agent market this season. And I'm actually going to talk about some of the prospects here and some of the free agents in a little bit. Kansas City Royals, their pitching just doesn't look very good. This is a team with some good young bats. They were 81-81 this year, but there's speculation that they may be trading some of their guys because they're not going to be able to sign them all. They're not going to be able to sign all the players that they have at the long-term deals that they're going to demand. So you got Moustakas, Escobar, what's his name? Lorenzo Cain out in the outfield. They've got their best player. Who the heck is their first baseman? Their first baseman who's young, the left-handed, Hosmer. Thank you. So you wonder, they've all these players that they want to sign some of them. They've got to give somebody big money to be the figurehead of that organization. So maybe they are going to trade somebody and shift somebody out. They have some pitching contracts that aren't exactly great. Nothing exorbitantly bad, but you don't love what Ventura is doing, even though he's affordable. You don't love what Volquez is doing, and he's being paid not huge money, but big money for not being very good. You can replace him at league average kind of money and get comparable production, and teams like the Royals can't really afford to do that. The Royals can't afford to be paying a guy twice what the market really justifies just in order to, because that's what happens. They just can't afford that. So we'll see what happens. Kansas City could be selling, but they won't be buying. Let's put it this way. Cespedes is not going to Kansas City. They don't have the prospects to get Chris Sale or one of those big time trade targets. So you look at this Orioles team, they look like a team that's kind of dead in the water. They don't look like they're a contender. And it looks like they've got players that they're going to eventually have to make tough decisions on. So to me, that's a team that's ready to sell. Hitting rebuild mode, they won their title. You know, they made the World Series 1 year and they won it the other. So they pretty much succeeded. I would call that a developmental success. So now the Royals would not be selling out for naught by selling out right now. And they got it done. They have to rebuild again. So I could see the Royals doing what they could to ship out. And to me, Hosmer would be the one that I would get rid of. He's their best player. But if you're going to spend money somewhere else or in multiple places, take full advantage of your best young player at a position that you can be a little bit thinner at. You can sign first basemen for affordable money that can produce offensively. So ship off a young player like, you know, a younger Anthony Rizzo. Let someone else pay the top dollar in assets or give him his contract and you fill that spot with a cheap Kendrys Morales or whoever you can find, Carlos Beltran, you know, get him for a 1 year deal or something. Those are the kinds of deals. It seems like Beltran would be a kind of like what the Oakland A's did with Rich Hill. You sign a Beltran, maybe he helps you contend this year, but in all likelihood he doesn't. And then you trade him at the deadline to somebody else. That to me is what a Beltran move would do, and that would make some sense because again, Kansas City was 81-81 this year. They were 500. If Ventura can pitch a little bit better, if they do still get stuck with Velquez and he can pitch a little bit better, if Danny Duffy can come out and pitch a Cy Young type of season again, then maybe they can still be competitive. The Central isn't a great division, even though I think the Indians have a chance to be a great team. Maybe they can get into that wild card hunt again. They only missed the wild card by 5 games. Maybe they can improve in some places where they underperformed this year. And maybe those small little additions can help them at least be competitive. And if they can be competitive while affordable, while also still rebuilding, that's the way you should be trying to do it. And the Royals are kind of in that position. So that'd be interesting. The White Sox, I don't know what they do this year. They've been trying to get into the hunt for a couple of years, and they weren't able to do it on the scoreboard. They have the players, and there are players there that still have the potential, but they're just not that performance and that potential is not showing up in the win column, and the money is pretty hefty. So I don't know what they do this year. It's a weak class. If they were going to triple down, that to me would make some sense because they went all in 1 year, they doubled down the next, and neither year worked. I could see how they would feel shell-shocked and sell. I could understand that. That feels like a move that they could do, and they've got the pitching to do it. If they really want to just go full sell mode, you take a monstrous offer for Sale, or you take a good offer for Jose Quintana, who's finally getting appreciated for the fact that he's been a really good pitcher for a few years here. They could maximize value there by selling. That they could do that. The question being, though, do they want to go in full mode like that when they still have some good players on that team? That's not a bad club. They have some flaws. If they added a Cespedes, does all of a sudden, that would be a triple down. That would be an aggressive move by the White Sox. But does that make them better? Can those players that haven't quite done what they needed to, can they do it? Do they sign a Dexter Fowler for a few years and give him the 3 or 4 years he wants? I don't see that happening necessarily, but I could see how it makes sense for the White Sox if that's the direction they tried to look. Again, I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know their mindset. So we'll see. Minnesota Twins, interesting squad. 59 wins this year after having a very nice 2015. 103 losses, though. That team really looked really bad in the first half. They actually played as well as almost anybody in August and September. So they kind of got things together and still lost 103 games. They have a new GM there now. They've been drafting and developing extremely poorly. We'll see what happens. They've got Byron Buxton, who has all the talent in the world. But the Twins, again, the Twins seem to struggle to develop their most talented players. And Buxton is one of the most talented players in all of baseball. So we'll see what happens. The Twins shouldn't play as poorly as they did in 2016, but 2015 was a surprise. They shouldn't have performed that well either. So we'll see what happens. They're not going to go out in the free agent market and add players of any real consequence, even though they need to. That staff really needs to be adding some quality, and they don't have it. So I think they have a ceiling. I mean, you don't win 40 games more than you did the previous year. So they're not getting to 95 wins to win the division, probably. That would be a 36-win increase. I don't think they're winning 36 more games this year, but they could definitely win 20. I mean, they were really probably 10 or 15 games below what they should have been. If they fell a little bit below 500 this year, I wouldn't have been surprised. But I was surprised that they fell all the way to 59. That's a long drop for a team that was pretty effective in 2015. So I still see them as probably a 70, 75-win team at most. But nonetheless, that's a good team. That's a competitive team. That makes it a lot tougher on the Royals and the White Sox and the Tigers to win. It makes it a lot tougher on the Orioles and the Jays and the Yankees to get a wild card spot if they lose some of those games. So we'll see what happens. As far as the West goes, I thought Texas outperformed expectations, but Yu Darvish wasn't the full 100% Yu Darvish. So you can expect some improvement, some more consistency, and some more dominance from him this year. I expect a regression from Cole Hamels. The offense on the whole was good. They're going to lose Ian Desmond, who was one of the best free agent signings of the offseason for them. So they're going to lose him. Nomar Mazzaro will probably be better. He had a pretty good season as a rookie, but he should be better. This kid's pretty young, pretty talented. And he did have some stretches where he really wasn't all that good. But overall, for the year, he had a good year. I would expect him to be better. So they're going to have some improvements. They've got Jurickson Profar still there. There's some talent there. They've got Jonathan Lucroy at catcher now. That's going to help, unfortunately. I really didn't like the fact that he didn't go to Cleveland. I would love to have seen him in Cleveland this year, the upcoming 2017 season, because that would really have signed up the Indians as maybe the best team in the American League with that pitching staff and Jonathan Lucroy and Francisco Lindor and Jason Kipnis and all the young – and Michael Brantley coming back and all that young talent in Cleveland. Jonathan Lucroy would have been a fantastic fit there, and he just refused. And I kind of sort of understand why, but I don't agree with it. So he's going to end up helping Texas. So we'll see what happens. I think the Rangers regress a little bit. Seattle should be good enough, but they only got to 86 wins, and this is a team that's supposed to be on the cusp of winning year in and year out, and they never quite get there. And I don't see how they do it more. 86 wins. Good year. You got to get to 90. To win a wild card, you got to get to 90. They need to win four more games. And they had a magical finish to that season. They almost were able to get to the wild card this year. I don't know if they can continue that magic. When you have to rely on magic and chemistry and the kind of that kind of Cinderella story, that Cinderella narrative has to play out on the field in order for you to get within playoff range, I don't like that. I want to see a team that on paper should make the playoffs. And even if they disappoint, they still do. And if they have something magical like the Indians did this year, they go from a possible playoff team to a possible World Series contender. That's how you want to see it, and I don't see that. Seattle, I think, is probably not a playoff team on paper, and they need something magical to happen to even make the playoffs. And it didn't work this year, and so that's my concern there. I don't think it'll happen next year either. But they should at least be a competitive squad. You got to hope that Felix Hernandez can stay, can at least be an effective pitcher. He had a good year this year, but he's definitely not the Felix of his dominant days. And one of these days, he's going to collapse. Because, I mean, he's throwing 88 miles an hour. Curveballs, sliders, movement, intelligence, you know, that all helps you. You get age well. But it's difficult to throw 88 miles an hour as a right-hander in the American League and still be a top pitcher who can lead, who can front a rotation. So there's a definite concern. But if he can at least pitch like a number three, then Seattle has to be happy. And so we'll see. Houston, 84-78. They should be better this year. They underperformed. I think expectations were too high going into 2016, but 84 wins was below what they should have. They were better than that. They had stretches where they were much better than that, but they also had stretches where they were a lot worse than that. Dallas Keuchel was, again, I don't know how he did what he did last year. I mean, in 2015, I never expected it. I didn't expect it in 2014 either, but he was worse in 2016 than he should have been. So he could actually improve from that. This is an interesting team, the Astros. I can definitely see them making the wild card because I'm not a huge believer in Texas and because the Angels are awful, the Oakland A's are also not good, and Seattle's just decent. I could see Houston actually leaping up and winning this division. They have the young talent. They have the assets to trade if they want to, and they're in a position that is good enough to be able to win that division. So I would expect some improvement. I would expect at least six or seven more wins from Houston. They could get to 90, 91, maybe 92, and that would win that division. Because, again, I think Texas is going to fall back to the pack a little bit. I'm going to let you guys all go. We've been talking for a little while here. I covered the American League and what we maybe expect looking ahead to 2017. Hopefully you liked the podcast. Again, it was kind of a nonchalant last-minute thing. I was going to be talking with Jim Callis at 9 a.m. this morning. We're going to be talking with him tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. So we'll do that. We'll be talking nothing but prospects with him. We'll talk about the Arizona Fall League. We'll talk about 2016, and we'll also talk about 2017. So we'll look back and examine what has happened. We'll look forward and see what we think might happen, and we'll break down what's going on in the Arizona Fall League. So Jim Callis from MLB.com is going to be joining me tomorrow. I'm your host, Chris Mitchell. You can follow me on Twitter, at CJMitch73. You can follow me on Facebook as well. You can also join our Facebook page, Talk Fantasy Baseball or Regular Baseball or anything baseball-related. It's a podcast to be named later. Again, for those of you out there that are nervous or scared about what happened with the election, don't be. America is a strong country with foundations, with institutions that I realize we don't have a ton of confidence in them, but they are sound. They will be okay, and they will check. They will balance. They will stop. They will prevent. They will obscure, whatever. They will do what they need to make sure that Donald Trump doesn't ruin this nation. So I realize there's a lot of reason to be nervous or scared or upset or just frustrated and angry. I feel it all, but everybody's going to be all right. And the hot stove is up and running. Baseball talk is getting – this is the best time to be talking baseball all year long. And the snow is coming. That's what's so great about baseball. Watching the games, following the season, rooting for your teams, rooting for underdogs, rooting for the Cleveland Indians and the Cinderella story, rooting for the Cubs to win a World Series after 108 years, getting rid of the GOAT, getting off the schneid, letting people forget about Bartman. That's all when the games are actually going on. Now we get to speculate about the teams. We get to speculate about the players. We get to look at the free agent rumors. We get to see who signs who. While the snow is falling and we're hearing Christmas carols, we'll be looking ahead and prognosticating what we think is going to happen in 2017 based on where Justin Turner signs, where Yenis Cespedes signs. Does Chris Sale get traded? What kind of contract does Rich Hill earn? These are all fantastic opportunities for interesting conversation and distractions from our everyday lives. So everybody just hold on tight, be good, be safe, go back to your lives, improve yourselves. Go out there and be better than you were yesterday. Realize that in order for this country to be good, you have to be better. I know I have to be better. So go out there and be better. Work harder. Do smart things. Learn from the fact that people voted stupidly in this election. Learn that people voted out of hatred and anger and wanted and trying to blame other people for their own situations in life. Realize that we all could be better off. We all need to be doing better. And just so anyway, again, everyone will be fine. Let's get back to talking baseball. Let's get back to caring about baseball. And tune in tomorrow when I have Jim Callis on the program. Thanks, everybody. Be good, be safe, and continue to read and listen over at minorleagueball.com.